You're listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. I'm your host for this week's segment, Ann Nicholson Weber. And I'm very honored to be here today with Cherry Jones, who is starring in the touring production of Doubt, which is here at the LaSalle Theater for a fairly short run. Welcome, Cherry Jones.
Thank you, Ann.
When you first read a script, I imagine that you have a picture of a character in your mind, and the character may not be someone that right away you can see how you will play, how that person fits you. And I'm interested in how you go about creating a version, in this case of the nun, Sister Aloysius, who fits you but is still somehow in essence that person that you saw in the text.
Well, I think I do start both externally and internally. I mean, there's always debate with actors, which way do you begin? But I think most of us truthfully begin simultaneously. I don't quite know how you do it any other way. And I sometimes start with something as simple as posture. Mm-hmm. And I knew quickly with Sister Aloysius, for some reason, I thought, I don't want her to have ramrod, straight, nun posture. I want her to be somehow broken, mm-hmm. a bit broken by life. And I couldn't quite figure out why she and her husband had not had children. And I decided at some point that she had had a hysterectomy as a young woman, and so she actually was suffering from osteoporosis. So she was actually quite frail physically, but with this burning, you know, will inside. So it became more interesting to me, those contrasts of this burning will and this failing shell, you know. And
so are you seeing a version of yourself? Are you seeing yourself as Sister Aloysius when you first read it?
No. I think I was trying to get her emotional rhythms and her muscularity, and because when you read a script, that's what I usually get, are the emotional rhythms of a person, and mm-hmm. and because of that, how they breathe, and because of how they breathe, how they stand, and because of how they stand, what their muscles have become like through the years, and but without ever thinking that specifically, but it's always sort of in the back of my mind. Mm-hmm. And then, because I remember I did when I did Hannah Jelks at the Goodman, yeah. With Robert Falls and company, I was so intimidated of that role because she was such an extraordinary person and such an intellect and such a blazing soul on this earth. And I couldn't figure out how to even begin to approach her, mm-hmm. internally or externally, really. So I relied heavily on the externals and decided maybe if I build her a home, uh-huh. that I think is worthy of her, she will come.
So just physically in your body, if
yes.
I can create
something. If I can create
like
something that feels like her, maybe mm-hmm. she will slowly start to inhabit it. And that really, that was a wonderful way to approach something that's that intimidating. Mm-hmm. I just took away the pressure of trying to figure her out completely and just started building her this external home. And then, of course, the other starts to,
appears.
It starts
somehow.
To come together. Yes, yes. Who knows how?
Yeah. Well, when you started with Sister Aloysius, what was the most daunting thing about this role? What were the scenes that you had to work hardest to find a way into, or the aspects of her that you felt weren't accessible to you right away?
I think I worried that I wasn't going to be able to capture her authority.
Mm-hmm.
And because I've not been known for playing roles with great authority, characters who have great authority, and I'm usually sort of the victim or the preyed upon one or the, you know. But now that I'm 50, that's going to change.
Uh-huh.
And so I was really daunted by that, and of course, like most of us, I also wanted the audience to understand my character, mm-hmm. and which is a real pitfall. I really wanted them to understand her noble mm-hmm. soul, you know. And it was Doug Hughes, our brilliant director, Mr. Hughes, who who kept encouraging me to make her increasingly appalling to this Methodist from Tennessee, you know. And in fact, it was important for me, obviously, to embrace those flaws in this woman. And once I started embracing her flaws, then I really started to fall in love with playing someone who is so hot-tempered and so emotionally charged that she's not in control of herself. She is out of control in many of those scenes, particularly with the priest. She's not approaching this from an intellectual place. It's just pure, you know, white-hot emotion,
yeah,
which is so much fun to play. And at the same time, though, I really am playing the classically male role in the play, and the priest is playing the classically female role in the play, because in a way, Aloysius, even though she's not in control of her own emotions, she's often in control of the situation because she keeps finding an upper hand, know. So it's an interesting.
Well, that brings up another to me very interesting theme in the play, which is the gender politics, kind of, and in this very hierarchical world that they're in, she is Father Flynn, her antagonist, is also her superior, and there's a scene that the audience, the night I saw it, audibly gasped when there's a meeting between the two of those two characters, and Father Flynn sits in Sister Aloysius's chair. It's her office. She's called the meeting. He comes in and sits in her chair. And it was quite shocking, actually, now to me, not coming up in such a hierarchical world or not in that time. But more importantly, the heart of her conviction is intuition, which is a kind of a feminine trait. I mean, she's male in the sense that she's making things happen in this play. She's not the victim.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, the play was also in part about facts, which is kind of a typically male analytical way of approaching a problem, versus her intuition. There's really no other word for where her conviction comes from, is there?
Well, I mean, this is where you get into the brilliant balance of the play. John Shanley, our playwright, has given Aloysius just one line that tells the audience what she has seen.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, even within that line, it's very ambiguous. And the audience cannot really know. It's very understated, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And so the audience, from that line, still cannot know what she saw. She doesn't go into any great description.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't describe how the child reacted, how the, you know, the priest responded. She doesn't go into any description because she doesn't need to, because she's talking to the priest himself.
Right.
But that's a real disadvantage for Aloysius to make her case to the audience.
Right.
And I had to. I'm going off on a tangent here.
It's okay. Tangents are good.
But I had to give myself just a whopping backstory so that when she sees what she sees, which is very damning, and I've made this up. I've had to create what she saw and when she saw it and what the weather was like around it and the wind was blowing. And I mean, every night I see so clearly that moment. And so I don't really think it is intuition.
I see what you're saying.
I think it is. It's beyond intuition. I think she has experience and knowledge of that child and how that child behaves. And I think it really is beyond intuition. Mm-hmm. I would argue that point with the.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Well, that's another interesting point for me about Aloysius. She is so canny. She's so worldly wise in an interesting way for someone who you think of as having been sequestered as a nun, although the playwright lets us know that she's been married. She's had sexual experience.
Again, a wonderful balancing point.
Right,
yeah.
Right. She's not an hysteric. She's, you know, there's...
Yeah.
And most of the early scenes, many of the earlier scenes are with the true innocent, this other character, Sister James. And she just knows more. She says things and you say, yeah, right, that's true. You know, she really is getting it. Then there's this incredible to me scene with Mrs. Muller, who is the mother of the boy whom Sister Aloysius thinks has perhaps been abused, or, well, Sister Aloysius knows has been abused in her mind by Father Flynn. And something for me shifts in the play at that point, because Mrs. Muller is the first character she's come up against who in some ways knows more about how the world works than she does. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mrs. Muller has had terrible experiences, mm-hmm. is in a terrible situation. Mm-hmm. And I wondered what happens to your character when for the first time she finds herself interacting with someone who she can't best in the sense of just knowing she knows more. Do you know what I'm
mm-hmm.
asking?
Mm-hmm. Well, I do think she's wise enough to appreciate that she's dealing with someone who knows more than she does.
Mm-hmm.
And yet she knows more about this woman's son's situation, and it's driving her crazy.
Yeah.
It is the most frustrating of scenes for Aloysius, because she's backed into a corner by this mother's love of her son and this woman's. It's hard to talk about this for people who haven't seen the play without giving things away.
Right.
But I think I would like to just speak for a moment about how difficult it was as an actor to figure out she again is so harsh with this woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I was having a really hard time with it. There's a moment where the woman is asking, basically pleading for her son's life in a way, and Aloysius basically just says, "I'll try." You know, mm-hmm. there's a very dry line at one point in that scene, and I was struggling with it and making it sentimental and, you know, trying to show again how, you know, and it was Doug Hughes again who said, no, it's got to be a very dry, cut and dried response. He said, this is a woman whose husband has died in World War II fighting the Nazis. This is a woman who watched the only way they could rid the earth of the Nazis was to grind Dresden into dust, grind Cologne into dust, mm-hmm. Berlin into dust. And that is how you deal with evil, and that's how you root it out. And that if it takes two soldiers today going behind enemy lines to save 500 tomorrow, you sacrifice those two,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so
a certain ruthlessness.
A ruthlessness.
Yeah.
Which again goes back to that amazing line that she has about when you take a step to address wrongdoing, you are taking a step away from God.
Right.
But in his service. You know, this play is really quite astounding, I think. It's so simple, mm-hmm. and so lean and spare, and yet it touches on, you know, so many of our deepest struggles as human mm-hmm. beings.
Mm-hmm. It really detonates a lot
yeah.
of things.
It
yeah.
really does.
Yeah. Yeah. You played this role for a long time on Broadway. How long was the run?
Between Manhattan Theater Club and Broadway, I remember exactly, 452 performances.
A lot of Sister Aloysius. And then you went and did Faith Healer with Ralph Fiennes while this role was taken over by Eileen Atkins. And now you're coming back to it after a break of how long?
About 9 months, I guess.
9 months.
8 or 9 months.
So one question is, what happens when you come back to a role after a break? Do you see things differently? Do you do things differently just because you've been away from it?
I think I did. And we rehearsed across the hall from the same rehearsal space that we rehearsed in originally. And it was so wonderful to be back in that tiny little rehearsal room and with a very different set of actors.
Right.
Chris McGarry and Lisa Joyce are just extraordinary performers. They get right to it, and they have amazing chops, and mm-hmm. they're very comfortable in being. They're very exposed. They're mm-hmm. very open. They're very natural, and it's just beautiful watching them with these roles. And very delicate, And Brian and I were, you know, these big old theatrical hams,
he played Father Flynn in the original production in New York. Right.
And so it was interesting for me to have to figure out how to keep her drive and the theatricality, which I think is also a part of this woman. She is kind of theatrical, and yet sculpt my performance now more to Lisa and Chris's. And I still don't feel that I've completely accomplished that yet. Mm-hmm. It was much easier in a smaller room, and I was enjoying it so much. And then we got into these vast spaces that we've been playing. I mean, the first one was 2000, which is the Amundsen, but unlike the LaSalle, which is almost 2000, because the LaSalle was built in 1906, the seats are very close together, and the Amundsen, you can stretch out and, you know, take a nap. And the other space has been 2,800 and 3,000. And I think it's pushed me back up into a greater theatricality. And I've lost some of the subtlety that I had gained going back to it. And
with these different actors.
Yeah.
Is it possible to be specific about what that means when you said that their performances were more delicate and you needed to sculpt yours to match them? Can you give examples at all of what that specifically entails?
Well, it's hard because I still stay true to the blueprint for Aloysius. But there are moments when Chris does a wonderful thing, which Brian used to, which was equally wonderful, just different. Brian would twist a theoretical villain's mustache when he'd feel the audience too much on his side, and then he could turn into, you know, little Mary Sunshine when he
needed to pull them back.
Right. Mm-hmm. So he was doing an ongoing manipulation with the audience. I could never really do that because she needs to stay, you know, this rigid, certain arrow. Mm-hmm. And if I start manipulating too much, then it loses its spine a little bit.
Yeah.
Chris, on the other hand, is very sly in that he remains this very neutral, certainly charming, passionate, wonderful man, but with a neutrality, a bit of a mask that the audience can then
project on. Yeah.
Which is very interesting.
Yeah.
It is not as much of a brick wall at times that Brian would, you know, I mean, we
to
would,
give you something to butt against.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's, but it is in that in its, his neutrality increases my frustration though, because I see him
kind of jujitsu. So, yes. There's no way for your energy to come back or gets
you
lost.
Know, so it's really, I mean, it's fun that way because so I have to try different ways to make my point when he appears to be so innocent, you know. But it doesn't help me to then become softer. It only helps me to become even more certain and more rigid.
Driving.
It's funny, there were times early on Broadway when I would start to try to soften her a little bit, thinking I needed to win over more people, and I would try to just a touch. And we were collecting for Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS, at one point. And we would, it's wonderful when you collect for Broadway Cares as actors because you get to go out with your audience and sort of find out what they thought. And Brian was very naughty for about 3 weeks. He actually polled the audience to see what they thought.
One for me, one for her.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And the days that I softened her, I would lose my base.
It's like a straw poll. It's very interesting.
And when I would make her absolutely, you know, this strident, appalling, certain bitch, I would win more of the audience.
That
over.
Conviction would somehow carry
them. That conviction was very comforting to people.
Yeah, interesting.
And seductive.
When you talked about Brian adjusting his performance to the audience, it brought to mind something that I was thinking about. The performance I saw, there's a lot of humor in the play, a lot of very kind of funny, almost one-liners, in fact. And the audience was very warm. Everybody was obviously thrilled to be seeing this play and seeing you. And there was a lot of laughter. And I wondered if there's ever a time when there's too much and you actually somehow want to pull away from the humor or tell people to settle down a little bit.
You must have been there our first night.
Yes.
Because it was, we were all sort of blown away by the, because we hadn't had that kind of laughter in a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And it you do sometimes feel like you want to rein the audience in, but you know what? You don't really have to rein the audience in with this play because the play itself reins them
in. It begins to carry the
momentum,
seriousness.
As it's ratcheted up, people become absolutely silent and the listening becomes electric because they don't want to miss one clue.
Right.
You know.
Right, right, right. The mystery is obviously an important part of what creates the structure of this play, the suspense for the audience. And I know that in the Broadway run, you and the director agreed that you weren't going to know whether Father Flynn had done what you suspected him of or not. But on the other hand, the actor playing Father Flynn needed to know. He had to know what his story was. And in an earlier interview, you said that the minute the curtain came down on your last performance, he was going to tell you the answer you wanted to know. Did that happen?
Well, it didn't because I knew I was going to do the tour.
Oh, so
you know what? I've lost any interest in knowing.
Uh-huh. That somehow that need is no longer.
It's no longer there. And certainly as an actor, I have my theories on what's being played, but that's not true. Maybe 2 or 3 years from now, you know,
when
over
you're really
a drink,
really not gonna
I'll go to Brian or to Chris and say, okay, I want to hear every little piece of the story.
Right. I would think you would want to know someday somehow. You've played Sister Aloysius a long time now, both the Broadway run and the tour has been how long?
We started in September, till May.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
It's a lot.
Very old-fashioned way of being an actor, camping from one town to the next. What my question is, having lived with one character for this long, does any part of her become embedded in you? Is there any way that you change because you've inhabited her skin for so long?
My posture's gone to hell, and I've got to make myself improve my posture. I've also got to start sucking in my stomach. I let my stomach just go. It's a wonderful thing about playing an older nun.
In
a big habit. Right. You don't have to think about sucking it in.
Right.
And I think my voice is permanently huskier now because I drop her down into a
I worried about that. That seems
craggy. But you know what? It's my voice is smoky and husky anyway, and for Aloysius, I just make it a little more so.
Uh-huh.
But I've been very lucky to hold on to my voice throughout the run. I haven't had any vocal problems. I noticed that occasionally my speech is sometimes peppered with married and I pronounce things in a way that
as
Doug Hughes calls it, my 5 points accent, because who knows what this accent is. I decided at some point that she grew up in South Boston and then moved as a young woman to the Bronx because I'm not good with accents.
So a little of everything.
It's a little bit of everything, right. And probably a little Tennessee thrown in too.
Right, right. But in terms of, I mean, it's obvious that you admire things about her that you don't think are you.
Right.
And I just wonder, as an actor, do you learn from your characters?
Well, there's certainly a discipline about Aloysius that I have great respect for. Every time I sign a check or an autograph or write a letter, I keep thinking, do you think one can improve one's penmanship at 50? Do you start at 50 to learn how to?
I can answer that. No,
no.
You can't. Well, thank you, Cherry Jones. I so much enjoyed talking to you, and good luck with the rest of the run.
And thank you.
So Doubt is playing through January 28th at the LaSalle Bank Theater.